Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Tuesday, March 24th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Jessica Mendoza.
Like a slow motion video of a building demolition, we watched the best laid plans of my nephew's wedding crumble. James and his fiance Megan live near Seattle. As their March 21st wedding date approached, the lockdowns spread. And as the pandemic chased their date, they responded defiantly, "The wedding is on." But local officials had a public to protect. The reception venue was abruptly closed. Then the wedding venue was shuttered. Undeterred, they adjusted, just like many couples who have recently canceled receptions and honeymoons, but not their weddings. James and Megan would have a small courthouse wedding. Actually, it was a courthouse steps wedding. The judge met them outside and performed the ceremony standing 6 feet away. The reception also found a new venue. Guests from across the country dressed up in suits and ties and sparkly dresses and gathered on Zoom for a Hollywood Squares-like reception. The bride, groom, and best man joined from their car. We took turns toasting the newlyweds. Then we danced in our little video squares to Uptown Funk. Was this the wedding of their dreams? No. But there were ribald jokes and tales, peals of laughter, oohing and aahing over outfits, and tears of joy. Everything you could want in a wedding. Take that, coronavirus. Love conquers. Now to our five stories, including testing democratic boundaries in Israel, a new twist on juvenile justice in New Orleans, and building a sense of community in a Romanian village. Our first story, we look at navigating the concern for family members who are disregarding public health directives, often teens and seniors, and how to express compassion and care from a distance.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shined a spotlight on generational differences and generated a blame game about who is not doing their part to confront it. At one extreme of the spectrum are the spring breakers crowding beaches in Florida, symbolizing a generation that, unfazed by their own personal risk, is not putting collective public health first. At the other end are baby boomers, who health officials say may be among the most vulnerable. But anecdotally, they've sometimes shown as little caution about their health as youth, as they continue to go out and socialize. This is mounting pressure on the so-called sandwich generation, those caring for both older and younger than themselves. Many in this group are battling to get their aging parents to heed expert advice on social distancing. At the same time, they are raising kids who may not understand why they need to make sacrifices unlike any they have ever known. This is a really stressful time for people because you can't just jump on a plane and go to your parents, says Kathleen Kauth, an elder care mediator and president of KT Beck Enterprises in Omaha, Nebraska. There's a greater sense of separation. This story was reported by Sarah Miller-Yana in Toronto and Sarah Matusik in New York for The Monitor.
Civilian compliance can be more difficult to bring about in free societies. We look at Israel as an example of leaders confronting the coronavirus while testing the limits of democracy and rule of law, even if it's temporary.
Is the coronavirus a vulnerability for democracies as leaders marshal all the power at their disposal to address the crisis? Some see Israel as a canary in a coal mine. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has taken swift, aggressive action to contain COVID-19, winning praise from supporters. But critics say he and his Likud party have taken advantage of the crisis to attempt a coup against their rivals, who won a majority of parliamentary seats in recent elections. In the latest standoff, the Supreme Court has intervened to force the current Speaker of the Parliament to step aside, and he has refused to comply. The former head of the Shin Bet, Israel's equivalent of the FBI, warned that the government had effectively disabled the judiciary and legislature. And an Israeli historian of international renown has dubbed it the first coronavirus dictatorship. Yohanan Plesner, president of the Israel Democracy Institute in Jerusalem, says that the broader conclusion from the Israeli case is that, under the disguise of the corona crisis, reckless politicians can use it to violate democratic norms and conventions cultivated over decades. This story was reported by Dina Kraft in Tel Aviv, Israel, for The Monitor.
This is a story about developing a broader sense of justice. A reporter looks at a program in New Orleans where teachers become legal advocates for students to keep them in school instead of jail.
Every year, more than 1 million teenagers, including high schoolers, are arrested in the U.S. Students who go to jail are at risk of going down a hard-to-reverse path. Lisa Maria Rhodes, a social worker in New Orleans, wants to spring that trap. Her nonprofit helps young people in legal trouble and trains teachers to support students so that they can get out of jail and back in school. It's an unusual mission that puts teachers in courtrooms, asking judges to consider the education of young suspects. At the high school where Ms. Rhodes used to work, roughly 200 students, nearly one in four, need legal help each year. Students would be missing from class. I would call home and find that they'd been arrested, she says. It kept happening. Her nonprofit also works with unauthorized immigrants who need help to continue their education. Whether she's in a criminal court or an immigration court, Ms. Rhodes asks judges to weigh the future potential of a young life when deciding their fate. Judges also want to know who this child is in front of them, says Robert Schwartz, a legal scholar at Temple University. You're rounding out a portrait of a kid as a human being. This story was reported by Katie Reckdahl in New Orleans for The Monitor.
We visited a Transylvania town that's leveraging its history to draw tourists and is rebuilding a sense of community.
Carolina Fernoland traces her family's roots in Viscri, Romania, back to 1142. The historic Saxon village in Transylvania veered toward collapse after the 1989 fall of communism. We gained freedom, she says, but we lost the community. Ms. Fernoland is director of Mihai Eminescu Trust, a British non-governmental organization operating in Romania. She has helped lead Viscri's revitalization by engaging the Saxons, Roma, and Romanians who remain. Over the past two decades, the Trust has worked to preserve the region's ethnic and cultural heritage with more than 1,240 projects, including conservation efforts, youth education, job training for locals, and the planting of more than 2.5 million trees. Marlies Markel recalls the village of the 1990s, when her family relocated from Germany. No sewage system, abandoned houses, and few cars. It seemed that the modern times didn't want to touch the villages at the heart of Transylvania, Ms. Markel says in an email interview. She credits the Trust for raising the living standards of the village, which now attracts some 50,000 visitors annually. In warmer months, tourists invade Viscri's medieval fortified church, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Ms. Markel says, Viscri transformed into a village where it's worth living. This story was reported by David Karas in Romania for The Monitor.
This week's Global Points of Progress includes a record number of cities eliminating plastic use in the UK, a switch from diesel canal boats to electric power in Amsterdam, and two Irish women who won the world's top architecture prize. To read this global roundup by Noah Robertson, go to csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary on European politics from the Monitor's editorial board. If you tally what ails the European Union, coronavirus lockdowns, looming recession, resurgent nationalism, Brexit, it's amazing that the EU still holds together as a home for 27 nations. Yet this week, the Union's leaders are expected to approve membership talks with two countries, Albania and North Macedonia. Instead of cowering before illness and other turmoil, this community of nearly 450 million people seeks to expand itself. Such confidence in the EU's health and its power of attraction befits a proclamation made last year by Ursula von der Leyen, president of the bloc's executive body. She said, Europe must step up its role in the world. That role includes making sure Europe's most troubled corner, the Balkans, is brought into the EU fold. By opening talks with the two countries, the EU hopes to further push along their reforms. The bloc also seeks to counter the growing influence of Russia and China in the region. Most of all, the EU wants to show that its goal of creating a common home for Europe is alive and well. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're working on a story about a science project for homebound kids involving ice and string. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, even when illness seems unavoidable, it's possible to overcome fear and experience protection and safety. You can find her story in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team members who are all working from their homes, Jingnong Peng and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.